Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on this Wednesday. We begin our next hour, and we continue the conversation we ended the last hour with, and that's on the Shockers. We talked about K-State's new addition. If you got thoughts on K-State, you can do that. You can call us at 869-1240. You can leave us video comments on Facebook, YouTube, and X. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Or you can leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app. Any way you want to chat about it, we're happy to do it. So the Shockers add Emmanuel Okorafor yesterday. I believe that's how you say it. A big-bodied, you know, kind of fits a – you'd think with that size and everything that he will profile – nicely as a defender. I think, Tommy, it doesn't mean they're done, though. And that's to the question we got right before the break from Jordan. What do they do with those two spots left, maybe three spots left? Do they need shooters? I think they have some guys that can shoot in small doses. I think the better question is, do they need scorers? Because I think the answer to that is probably yes right now. They have some guys that you feel pretty good about offensively, but I don't think they have anybody yet that we know will be able to provide some offense. I think two things can be true. Like Kendall played junior college. He was able to score there. So maybe he can. Giles is probably your best bet. Boyd is your junkyard dog, I think, right? He's a defensive guy. He was the one that was the SoCon Defensive Player of the Year, but he did average 9 points a year last year. So that's decent offense. Valencia, you know, is probably a better option. We'll see who the starting center would be, Berg or Okorafor, but at least you have the size down there. You got all these young players, Tommy. I think they're the biggest wild cards right now. Like, are any of these young guys capable of stepping up in that way?
I wonder who's going to be the ball handler, like who's prime. And I'm sure it's probably Giles. I'm sure that's probably going to be your starting point guard, I would think. But there's not.
Kendall, I believe, ran the point a little bit for Barton.
But I'm not knocking Kendall. I mean, I'm sure that he, you know, has a great skill set. But, you know, we don't really know much about him coming from JUCO. Like, what kind of production can he give you right away? There's not a lot of depth at the primary point guard position right now, I don't think. And so that would be my biggest question is, who's going to be your general? Like, who's going to be handling the ball? Because we know that, the Shockers basically lost everybody, and they've done a really good job at fortifying the front court. But what does the back court look like, and who's going to be the guy to direct everything and run the point? That would be my big question mark going into it. I get the whole thought about, you know, they need scorers, they need shooters, like all of that. And that's not wrong. I wonder who's going to be the guy that, runs the point night in and night out.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. It's probably like it has been. If Paul Mills' history tells us anything, it's probably several of them, right? He had lots of different guys that would bring the ball up. And I would just guess based on that maybe. But then you think back to like Max Asmus. So maybe, I think maybe we don't know yet because the player isn't on the roster yet. I don't know what they're still working with financially. I don't know if there is, whatever it is, they're probably going to have to go down to another level to find it. You remember when they brought in, I'm ashamed that I can't remember his name now because he played for West Texas where I went to college, and he was, what is his name? Anyway, he had a real high profile at Division II and helped, go to a national championship game and all of these things. Maybe there's a player like that down there somewhere that you could sort of take a risk with. Like, just, you know what I mean? Like, a player that can score. Can they come up to Division I basketball? But a player that's filled it up at some level somewhere, maybe that's an option. It's hard to guess at this, to Jordan's question, what should they do? I don't know. We don't know because we don't know what they're working with, right? Do they have a $2.5 million bag to go throw at a Serbian international star like K-State just did? I don't think they do. So I don't know what they should do with those potential spots. I don't know what they have in the tank. What would be the best fit? Yes, it would be a couple of guys who can score. I think that would be the best fit. I think they're going to have enough defense now, and that is the right way for Wichita State to build this thing up. Now it's about, it's always going to be about fit. We're all guessing. Every single one of us that guesses at this is going to guess at how a fit is when you have this many new players for every team. It will be the hardest college basketball season to predict preseason than we've ever seen before for all teams. But, you like to have the pieces at least.
Well, and at least with the way the roster has panned out so far with the transfer portal and all of that. I mean, I think that we could all probably infer that this is not going to be a highly explosive offensive team.
I don't think so.
At least with the way the roster is right now, there are pieces for sure. I know Giles averaged like over 15 points a game at his last stop and all of that. I mean, that's great and everything. Like, there's going to be offense for sure, but I don't think we're going to see a team that's going to be putting up, consistently 80 plus points a game. That's probably not in the DNA of this roster as it stands right now. Even though they do have a couple of scholarship spots left, maybe they can go and prioritize offense, and that might help them a little bit. But at the same time, I think that, like we talked about, this is going to be probably more of a grinded out, low scoring, muck it up, hold your opponents down type team. And with the additions that they've gotten, and I'm really excited about Jarrett Valencia because I feel like he fits that profile really well, and I think he can be a difference maker defensively for this team. That's going to probably be their calling card. That's going to be their bread and butter, I would think, as of right now with the way that this team pans out.
And look, Valencia shot 38% from three. Not a ton of them. I don't think what you're going to see is a team that all of a sudden leans on three-point shooting. I think that gets this team, under Paul Mills, at least in his brief history, into a little bit of trouble. I think effective three-point shooting and bulk three-point shooting are two very different things. Unless they get some guard who is known to take, five or six threes a game, I can't imagine this is going to be a team that's in the top half of the country in three-point shot attempts, right? And I think that that's okay. If they're an elite and premier defensive team that makes you work for it, and I think that's what we're seeing being built. I can't wait till the dust settles on all this and we talk to Paul Mills to see, how much of this strategically has been just about getting a bunch of dudes that you think can lock it up defensively for a team. That's always a great place. Like college basketball, if you can make it hard on the other team, I feel like you raise your floor so much. it's hard to go on the road and win in college basketball. If you've got this team that's not allowing more than, you know, 70 points a game or whatever it is that has to come into Coke Arena, like, that's going to work. That's going to work. And they'll beat good teams that way.
I mean, what do they always say? It's cliche, but defense travels, right? Like, that's the cliche. So, like, yeah, if you can shut opponents down at home, but then you've got a skill set that can translate on the road, sure. Yeah. Like, I totally understand why that's being prioritized.
If it's hard to score on the road anyway, you might as well be good at not letting the other team score. Like, that is as elementary as it gets. I tell my now fourth or fifth grade basketball team the same thing. If they don't score, they can't beat us. So let's get in there and let's make sure they don't score. And they embrace that, and it's fine. But that's the same thing for the Shockers. Like, you're not going to go get PJ Haggerty off the street. So go get some dudes that'll come in, buy in. I mean, Greg Marshall built an empire that way. He really did. I can remember one, Quay Grant. Thank you, Jordan. God, I can't believe I forgot his name. Greg Marshall built an empire that way, right? Like, you just better buy in and be able to play defense. I can think of one team. Was it 21? It was the Connor Frank camp. It was that Austin Reeves was still here. They had a bunch of
it was well before 21.
Whatever year it was. I don't remember. Maybe it was 19. But anyway, the year they went and lost to Marshall, like, that team offensively was Landry Shamet was still on that team. So you had Shamet and Frankamp and Reese. Like, they were great offensively, but they were not the best defensive team. It was very, and I always gave Greg Marshall credit for letting that team play that way because it played to their strengths. But that was like the outlier. Every other year they had great teams. It was because they just locked you up.
I think it's fair, you know, to say that it might be, at least from an offensive point of view, with the way the roster has panned out right now, it might be a frustrating offensive season. Like, there may be games where we're like,
I'm counting on it.
Man, like, God, they cannot get the ball in the bucket. But as long as they're locking down on the other end, like, you'll take that trade off if you're Wichita State, because the years where outside of that one outlier year, to your point, the other years historically, like, I mean, going way back in time all the way up to today, the years where they've really tried to lean on offense, I don't think it's really worked out to their benefit. And so I think being able to have that identity be the lockdown, you know, make things really messy and ugly down low, that's Shocker basketball historically. And that's where they've had a lot of their success.
Yeah, and when was the last time the Shockers didn't have a frustrating offensive season?
You have to go back to that Frankamp and, you know, Shamet and Reeves team.
Every other year, it's like, man, they struggle to score. But so if you're going to do that, you might as well make it hard on the other team to score too. Anyway, I like the makeup of this. I do think they need another player with some firepower. I do, or maybe two. But from a strategy perspective, I like it, to answer the question. We'll come back. We got more Sports Daily. What's KU been up to? Shreya Slaughter will help us answer that question a little later. We have other stuff to talk about in this hour, too. Don't go away. Coming right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you here on a Wednesday. Let's give away some HTO. Let's do that. If you want to win a free iced tea, all you got to do is text keyword T to 20357. Sorry, I was trying to track what time it was. 20357, text keyword T. You'll get a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors to choose from. You can get those in East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. While you're there, check out the new refresher drinks. They're very popular. If you need a little energy boost, these free coupons are not for those drinks, but you can still try one. See what you think. Good luck, everybody. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. We come back here. Tommy, we've been talking a lot of college basketball. Let's look forward for the Royals because we're going to go back to college basketball in our next segment with Shreya Salata. As we see them now back at 500, and you and I love to do this. I do anyway. Looking ahead, like, okay, so we set 11-5, if you'll remember, on this 16-game stretch that they were on, that they started. So far, what are they? They're 6-1. To start that out, and they finish it up here with a couple games in Tampa, a couple games in Baltimore, and then they go on to Chicago. I think it's attainable, and it would put them at the end of this thing. I mean, now you look at it, and you can break it down even further. They've already returned to 500, so now they've got 9 games left. So let's break it down further. 5-4, the benchmark here. I think that's fair. Five of the 9 are going to come on the road. I know 4 of them are against the White Sox, but I think 5-4 is fair. And obviously there's room to be much better than that.
Yeah, I would go higher than that. I mean, I think 6-3 because, you know, keep in mind, I know the Orioles have a ton of great talent, you know, especially young pitching and all of that, but they're probably through the first month of the season, the most disappointing team in Major League Baseball. They're 7 games under 500. It reminds me a lot of when the Royals caught the Guardians early in last season, and you're like, man, it's kind of good timing that they're getting the Guardians now because Cleveland will be better the next time that they play and take advantage of it now. I think the Orioles probably will turn things around, I think, because they do have a ton of great talent, but they're in last place in the AL East right now. The expectations are a lot higher for Baltimore, and I think that they'll be able to get it turned around, but it's fortuitous, I think, for Kansas City to get Baltimore both at home earlier this season, and then they go to Baltimore more now when clearly the Orioles are reeling. So you've got them right after you've got two more games against Tampa. You've already beat them once. And then you play Chicago, who's one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. So I think 5-4 is probably underselling it. Like, I would look at a better record, you know, through this road trip, through the next, you know, few games. I'd probably go 6-3 baseline, if not better than that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they'll finish better than 5-4. But if all we were trying to do in the 16-game stretch was to get them back over 500, that's all it's going to take. And yes, I agree on Baltimore. Here's the interesting thing about Baltimore, though. They don't have Corbin Burns anymore, remember? They've got the worst pitching right now in the American League. Like, they're giving up a ton of runs, which is probably, to the timing thing, great news for the Royals, right? Like, it's kind of like the Rockies thing. Well, if you can't score against decent pitching, maybe you'll just be able to score against bad pitching. And in one of the games where they scored more than four runs, and I think they've only done it four times all year, was, I believe, against Baltimore early in the year. So, yes, I think that timing is kind of nice, right? I think it's pretty good timing. And so Tampa's good. The thing about Tampa is you're always going to face a good pitcher. Like, they're pretty deep in their rotation, and they'll face two good ones over the next 2 days. So, you know, with a rookie out there today, we'll see what happens, but it's going to probably be a lot like it was yesterday. And then, yeah, you hope you can pile it up a little bit when you face the White Sox and the Orioles. And again, that's not the long-term solution, though. Like, it can't just be an offense that only scores a decent amount of runs against bad pitching. That's a good place to start. Like, you should at least be able to do that. But I do think when we're talking, because everything we talk about with the Royals is with the anticipation of them getting back to the postseason and making noise, right? Like, it's not just, this isn't just a cute story like it was a year ago. There are clear expectations this early in the season. And so everything is in the scope of, well, what does it look like to trying to get back to the postseason and winning games in the postseason? And I think when we think about it that way, like, eventually they're going to have to hit against good pitching. Like, they're just going to have to. Maybe they don't. They'll face that in the Rays series. The Rays series of the next, what does that make, eight games that they'll play, nine games that they'll play? It's these games against the Rays that could be the most telling, I think, long term to the kind of pitching they'll consistently see in a postseason series. It's not what they're going to see out of Baltimore or the White Sox. I think Baltimore will pitch better by the end of the year or go down swinging, trying to get it in there. But, you know, like, what's the true indicator of the kind of pitching they'll face? It'll probably be what you see in the next two. And they're going to have to figure out a way. I don't even know. Like, it's so strange that the power numbers are collectively so bad, Tommy. Scratching and clawing runs together against good pitching is good and what you want. But right now it's like, no, we want some juice. We want to know that the juice is at least there, right? Scratching and clawing your way out to the wins that they've had lately are great, but man, we gotta know if that juice is there. We have to start learning that.
Every game that goes by, you know, the sample size gets larger and larger where we know the juice is probably not there. And I know that there are a couple of guys that are needing to kind of flip that switch and turn it around. I'm looking at Vinny Pasquantino. Salvi's done a better job lately. I think he's kind of broken out of his slump, so that's good. But by and large, overall, I think that this offense is what it is for the most part. We could probably see incremental improvement from Pasquantino, probably see incremental improvement from Michael Massey. But I think by and large, this team is who they are through 30 games of the season. And so without other reinforcements coming in, I think we can stop expecting them to just explode offensively, like have this like renaissance where they just are able to come out and just the bats are on fire. We saw it to an extent in the Rockies series, but everybody beats up on the Rockies. Like, everybody does. The Rockies are god-awful. They're 21 games under 500 through the first month of the season. Everybody beats up on Colorado. And you know what? As soon as the Royals were done with the Rockies series, they backed up the onslaught of offense that we saw in the final two games with a 2-0 win and a 2-0 win against the Astros. Like, they started to face a little bit better pitching. They won both of those games, but it wasn't like the big-time offense carried on after the Colorado series, it went right back to what we've seen basically the entire season outside of that 1-3 game stretch. So, I mean, I think that we can, at this point, until there are roster changes in one way or the other, whether it's calling somebody up like Caglione or making an acquisition of some kind, I think we can stop expecting this team to just go out there and put up a bunch of runs.
Well, I mean, it can be better, though, than what it is. Like,
it can be incrementally better, right? Like, they're averaging...
When your 3 and your 5-hole hitter have been as bad as they have to open up the year, I think there's room to be a, you know, like, let's say it's, you know, maybe they are scoring 3 runs a game and it goes to 4. Right. Like, I think
when they put 4 runs up on the board, you view that as a win, right? Like, that's a great outing for Kansas City's offense. Like, they're averaging slightly over 3 runs a game. And
it's bad.
Yeah. Like, it's like 3.1 is what they're averaging.
If they can get it to 4, that's what I mean. Like,
that's the magic number. Like, I'm done being like, man, they need to put up 5, 6, 7 runs. Like, it's going to be 4. And at that point, if they can put up 4 and then turn things over to their bullpen, that's their winning formula. That's kind of the way this team is composed right now. That's about all we can expect.
But you have to remember, like, when we're talking about the Royals and the potential, it should be better than what it's been. Like, take Vinny Pasquantino, and I know and consider that he even started slow a year ago, right? Like, if you go back and look, if he didn't have injuries last year, he would have been among the league leaders in RBI. Like, he was close to that last year. You know what I mean? Like, that. So that's what he does. Like, what he does when he's right is what this team needs so desperately. He just drives and runs. But he's not doing that right now. So his improvement adds a little bit. Putting somebody more productive in your 5-hole, I'm not saying that responsibility is on Massey, because I think that's unfair. I think it's fair to say the responsibility is on Vinny Pasquantino. I think it's unfair to say it's on Massey. Massey's a piece. Massey's not what Vinny Pasquantino needs to be for this team. So just try somebody else out in the 5-hole. Vinny's production, if it comes as normal, will absolutely add production to this offense. There's no question about it. It's why we love the top 4 in this lineup. And I've been on the record saying I thought it was as good as anybody's top 4 with India and Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny and Salvi. Well, when Vinny ain't going, there's not a lot of wiggle room elsewhere. And so if he gets back to what he's always been, which is a great run producer, a great run driver in or whatever, then that's going to help the offense by half a run a game. I really believe that. Like, him alone just getting out of the schneid will help that much. The other part is, do they, you know, I think you take Hot Hand right now, sort of in the middle of the lineup, and then eventually you're going to call somebody up there to help you do that. Like, if they call up Cags, he's not going to go in and just be the 5-hole hitter. He's going to start down at the bottom of the lineup. He's going to be protected, as he should be, because he's never going to get a strike thrown to him until he shows he can be patient at the plate. Like, all of those things have to happen for him. Trade deadline is far more likely, but we're so far away from that, Tom. Like, in a best case scenario, you're a month and a half probably away from making any impact there. So until you get there, back to our conversation in the last hour, you got to mix it up a little bit. You can't, like, if you got hot bats like you do, throw them in there where they can actually be productive. I love seeing Drew Waters single all the time with nobody out there on base. But let's try it when somebody's out there on base.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got guys that can deliver consistently in that role, you know, like, whether it's Drew Waters or, you know, even Freddie Fermin last night being able to be 3 for 4, like, put them in positions where, you know, their hits when they're getting on base are actually contributing to runs, where they're driving in runs with the production that they're providing at the plate. With Michael Massey, you know, he's had, I guess you can call it a benefit throughout the course of this season to fly under the radar. He's not been good at all this season, but he's flown under the radar because MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfro have been worse. And so all of the attention's been on those guys. And so Massey's been able to just be in that 5-hole or 6-hole, wherever they put him, you know, night in and night out, and go 0-for-3, 0-for-4, you know, like, not produce, barely bat. I mean, not even get to 200 for an average right now. His OPS is way down there. And it's just now kind of garnering the attention with Melendez down to AAA and Renfroe really not playing much, it becomes that much more visible that Massey is struggling in high-profile spots in the five-hole in the lineup. When you've got the top four that are delivering, even though Pasquantino has struggled, I think it's really that much more glaring because at least last night, and there have been other games where this has been the case, I mean, he's batting directly after Salvador Perez. And Salvi's getting on base at a much higher clip than he was 2 weeks ago. And, you know, Salvi's driving in runs. He drove in Jonathan India last night in the first inning, but he's hitting doubles. He's been a double machine, and he's getting on base. And Michael Massey has been an automatic out. He's not been able to drive Salvi in. And so I do think it's become that much more glaring and apparent and obvious. Now that you've got the other guys that have struggled worse than Massey out of the gate, they're either not on the roster right now or they're not playing a whole lot. And so it does shine that light more on the struggles that Massey has.
Yeah, I think that's like for me when I'm watching and again, I think Massey is useful and good and can be even an everyday player at his ceiling, but he is not being put in a good position right now. Like he is pressing. To me, it's pretty visible that he's pressing. Just slide him down to where he's always been good and let it be okay because they're going to need him right now. I think everything's going to be fine. I think everything's going to be fine because they're pitching enough and I love their bullpen and they just like they're, you know, three runs a game is going to be enough for them to win a lot of games. Is it enough games? I would say no. I would say it's not going to be enough. I think some of that gets better internally. And I think some of it absolutely must get better externally. Noah Cameron comes up to make the start tonight, Tommy. This is interesting. Noah Cameron's been, he's been really good.
He has been really good. Yeah, he was good in the spring. He's been good in the minors. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I haven't taken a look at him, but I can just tell you right now, his ERA's low. He started in AAA, by the way. He's got 2.58 ERA, but he's striking out a lot of batters. Like, he's striking out a little more than a batter an inning. It's over the last two seasons where these numbers are coming from in AAA, all of them, like he's been effective. So we wondered, like, what is the backup plan for that fifth starter? Well, then Marsh gets hurt. And what is the depth piece? Boy, that would be a big development. If Noah Cameron could come up today and have a nice day on the mound and just to know he's there. Because I don't think, like, has he ever been called up? This is a debut today.
No, this is his debut. Yeah, his major league debut.
He has all kinds of options for this team just to sort of sit in AAA and come up and be the reinforcements because they're going to get the same thing out of Alec Marsh. To your point in something you talked about in the last hour with how many innings the starters are pitching, these are potentially big developments for Kansas City, I think, in the long term of what could happen if they have any injuries in the rotation.
Yeah, and it's a best-case scenario, too, with Reagan's like not having to go to the IL, you know, just pushing his start back because you don't have to put Reagan's, your you know, number one guy, on the IL, and you get to see what this young kid has. You know, it could very well be like, hey, this could be a guy that we need to lean on as the season progresses. If you've got an opportunity for a spot starter or, God forbid, one of the main starters goes on the IL for any length of time, and I like the fact that he's going to get some run early in this season to be able to see what he's got. I don't think it'll be the last time we see Noah Cameron this season. And if he has a good outing, it's going to be tough today.
Let's hope it's not.
Yeah, like, right? It's going to be tough today. I mean, like he's opposite of Drew Rasmussen, who's a good pitcher. And, you know, good. Your debut is a challenge against the other guy that's going up against you for the Rays. But I like the fact that they're giving him some play early on in the season to see what he's got. And best case scenario, Reagan's doesn't have to go to the IL.
Absolute best case scenario with Reagan's. They got to have Reagan's. And it would have been so easy. That's the thing I think that's the most promising. It would have been so easy to put him on the IL. Right now, at this point, it's going to be that amount of time anyway. But the fact that they didn't and they don't have to, I think tells us it's not of major significance. He did not look good in his last start. I don't know for how much of that game that groin was bothering him, Tommy, but he didn't look good, right? Like he was giving up runs early and all these things. So I'm glad he's getting the extra rest. If Cameron pitches well, maybe skip his next start, you know, like don't rush it back when it's a soft tissue injury like that. But I thought Cameron, I hadn't paid any attention to him until he got called up. And I was like, man, he's been.
And one thing to keep in mind with Reagans, like if we're looking at the way the rotation, you know, pans out, Reagan's next start, correct me if I'm wrong, would be in the White Sox series. Like that might not be a terrible opportunity to give him a little bit more rest and, you know, let Cameron go if Cameron has a good outing today.
Or let him get his work in, right? Let him come in and pitch a couple innings and then just have a pull. Yeah, either way, let's hope Cameron finds some success. Cool story. He's been really, really good in the minor leagues, like really good. And he's been hanging around in AAA, and he gives the Royals some depth there that they desperately need. Here's the other part of it, Tommy. Keep this in the back of your head today. Remember how they need a high-profile bat? Noah Cameron could be a trade piece.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We are glad to be here with Shreyas Lada, our KU Insider, following along as K-State Shreyas makes a pretty large splash in the portal world with an international player that now today is being corrected to some reporting of $2.5 million on that NIL deal. KU has not made that deal yet, at least for a new player, right? We know Jaron Peterson's that kind of player. We assume probably Flory Badunga got something large, but they haven't gone outside and done something like that yet. And it begs the question, do you think that they will?
I think Darian Williams is the only player right now I have on the radar that could command something like that, where it'd be more than $2-3 million.
Who's the player?
Darian Williams.
For Texas Tech. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but from what I have gathered, and I talked to his agent like for 20 minutes on Saturday night, they're 100% focused on the NBA draft right now. Okay. So there's they told Kansas right now the focus is the NBA draft, is what he told me. Obviously, things can change based on feedback and stuff like that. They're going to go through the process. So that could stretch into like mid to late May, you know, whether he comes or doesn't. I don't know if Kansas is going to sit around waiting for it. But yeah, that was the one player that I was like, I think they could make a big splash on. Obviously, Flory got a nice pay bump with, you know, basically almost like it felt like a holdout, it felt like. But yeah, no, they haven't really significantly spent NIL dollars on somebody in the transfer portal this year compared to like something like last year where they paid AJ Storr and Riley Griffin big money.
Do you feel like they're holding out for Darian Williams? Like, I'm sure that he's, you know, he's definitely a big time addition if they're able to get him and he doesn't go through the NBA draft process. But is that prohibiting them from going after other people with that NIL money? Or do you think it's mainly Darian Williams or bust?
I think it's mainly Darian Williams' bust, but as we've noticed in Kansas, the way they operated is a lot of times guys kind of just come out of the radar. You know, they haven't been super publicly, you know, talking guys. Like one of them, like, you know, for example, Ahmad Bynum, I wrote about a couple of days ago. Kansas was very interested in him. That is now not on the table anymore, for example, because they kind of dug deep into some of his suspensions in the past, and they I heard from a source that Kansas just ended up canceling the Zoom calls they had set up for yesterday because they didn't like what they heard. And it was kind of a messy situation. But this is kind of what I'm saying. Like right now we're at the point where we're in the transfer portal where, you know, guys are there for a reason. And either they have a very high price tag, or B, there's some sort of war, you know, whether it's like a disciplinary thing or something like that on them. You know, with Darian Williams, like, I feel like, you know, they would prefer to have him like above all else. Like, I don't think there's anyone else that they really have on the radar that is commanding that kind of NIL figure. Obviously, you know, a guy like RJ Lewis would be something that they look at, but I don't think there's been much Kansas interest there. I think the price tag is just too high. And these guys know that the longer they stay in the portal and the longer other guys stay in the NBA draft, they are going to get the biggest share of NIL dollars left among one school. So if they're going to chase the money, like I was talking to an agent recently, like if there are guys who want to just chase NIL money, there's plenty of schools offering NIL dollars. The issue is, are they offering the other things the guys want? Winning opportunities, chance to play in the NBA eventually, stuff like that. So that's why Kansas is being a little prudent with the guys they bring on, because they want to be right culture fits, A, but also B, you know, the biggest thing is, are you okay with the idea of being a second fiddle to Darren Peterson? And some of these guys aren't. Like PJ Haggerty is not. He wants the ball in his hands.
Yeah. What about this kid from Washington who's a top prospect who has some size, who's pulling? I don't know if you've heard about him. Any interest from KU there? We always pay attention to the blue chip prospects when they're out there, and it looks like another one is out there.
I haven't heard anything yet on KU's side, but obviously things change so rapidly, right? And I'm guessing if the Blue Bloods are after him, Kansas will be right in that group. I haven't seen who's interested and who's not. I'm really intrigued to see how they fill out the roster, because it's clear they need a wing, they need a backup big, and they need a guy that can shoot the ball. So theoretically, if Zeke Mayo does get granted that fifth year, which he seems open to doing, and I've asked around guys in the NBA who cover the NBA, like draft and stuff like that, Zeke Mayo is not on anyone's boards right now. So obviously things can change. But if he does get that fifth year of eligibility, there's a high level of interest between both sides. He called it a backup plan. But, you know, reading in between the lines of just how much interest there is for him on this thing, I think he'd be a nice guy to fill out the roster. But I haven't heard anything on the Washington front, the Washington player.
We know that, there are several guys that entered the portal from Kansas that have already found new homes. Zach Clements is going to A&M, and we know that Diggy Coit's going to Maryland, and like all these different, you know, players going elsewhere. There are a couple of players that are still undecided. I'm sure Rylan Griffin is long gone from the Jayhawks, but I know Rakees Passmore is still out there. Have you heard, is there any chance that maybe he ends up returning to Kansas, or will he go elsewhere?
I reported a while ago, like I talked to him, that he didn't completely shut down the door of the idea of coming back to Kansas. This was very early in the process. Like this is maybe a couple of days after he declared and stuff like that. So obviously things have changed, but with Passmore, it seems like he's trying to figure out what his market is there, because he just wants playing time. That's basically what he said to me. He's like, the only reason I entered the portal was playing time. I love paying out to Bill Self. Bill Self basically told the same thing, like go out there, see what your worth is. Yeah. And if there isn't what you want, you know, we would welcome you back if there is a right fit there. The issue is Rakees Passmore is putting in a tough situation where if he does come back, he's not going to play next year. They have too many guards as is. What skill does Rakees Passmore give that the other guards don't already give at a better level, right? That's the issue for him. And I feel for him, and I feel for Rylan right now, because it feels like, especially for Rylan, I was texting a buddy, he's like, you know, covers Kentucky. It feels like he's a little bit of a backup plan for a lot of schools right now. You know, he's not the number one option. And, you know, Kentucky was very interested until they weren't. I know there's murmurs of LSU and Miami and stuff like that. So even Alabama, I'm intrigued to kind of see what happens, because I feel like nobody really anticipated him being the transfer portal market as long as he has been right now.
He's got an opportunity to go somewhere and be a great player again. It's not just like, remember what he was like. It's not even a, just to be a piece. Like he could be elite somewhere else. Let's talk football for a minute. Trey Slotta, KU beat reporter for the KC Star, joining us both men's basketball and football on the football front. We just completed the draft. We see some KU guys go. That's always good for the program. How have things been now through some practices and some looks at this roster? Are they going to have enough? They've had a nice portal cycle. Like, are they going to have enough to compete in the Big 12, you think?
I think it's too early to say, but I feel confident that they should be in good contention to be a bowl team next year. I think a lot of the whether they compete for the Big 12 or not hinges on Jalen Daniels' ability to play as well as he's played before last year, really. You need him to be back at that level, if not better. But I feel more confident than I did a couple months ago. You know, they've done a good job reloading the transfer portal cycle. The continuity is there. Obviously, we haven't seen their practices in like 2 weeks, because I know K-State and Kansas have a different schedule, but they ended spring football for Kansas around like 11th, I think, or so, the last practice was. They've done a good job of addressing some needs in the transfer portal in the summer. Obviously, the one guy I was disappointed to see leave was Keon Barnett from Arizona, because I think he would have been a really nice tight end. But I think that speaks to the competition in the room. Deshaun Hanukkah is doing a really good job. I've heard good things about him and the other tight ends, the younger guys they brought in. So that's a positive sign, perhaps. But I feel more confident about KU football than before. And I meant to mention this earlier, but in the comment that was saying Furphy did get NIL. It was just hush hush. Like, they had to send it to Australia to get the NIL paid off. So the idea that Furphy did not get paid NIL is not
but
true.
But did his inability to get it easily impact, do you think, at all his draft decision?
Not really. I was in contact with his entire, like, his camp, the entire process. They were getting told that he could be a lottery pick last year. And he worked out with lottery teams. He met with multiple lottery teams. Like, no one expected the slide to be what it was, you know? And obviously, you know, he ended up in a good team. The Pacers are a good team, you know? But the expectation was Furphy was going to be gone by 20, you know? And I think, the way the season played out was tough on him. And I think he really loved his time at Kansas, though. Like, I think there was no issues with that there. But it was a little bit tricky, you're right, to get the NIL money to him because they had to send, like, a guy to Australia. And as soon as he lands on Australian soil, they give the bag, essentially. But, yeah.
That's wild. Going back to football real quick, Shreyas, before we let you go, how did you feel about the landing spots for some of the Jayhawks that were drafted?
I really liked Devin Neal's landing spot. I really didn't love that he fell because I felt like he should have been a fourth, fifth round guy, you know, at worst. I get the traditional speed sense. Devin is not the speedster per se, but he's much faster with pads. I think he has good acceleration. I am really intrigued to see how they use him because I think he can be the number two back behind Alvin Kamara this year. I think he's better than Keandre Miller. Keandre Miller's never healthy. That's the issue there. But number two, like, Kansas didn't really use him as a pass-catching back as much as he played in high school. Like, I was talking to his dad, like, ages ago about this, but he was used a lot in high school as a pass-catching back. I'd love to see him using that role a little bit with the Saints, obviously, as long as – in the sense of he behind Kamara, because I don't think he can take the starting job, but I feel like he can compete for it after Alvin retires or moves on or whatever. I don't presume Alvin Kamara is in the Saints' super long-term plans. He's older. You know, I presume he maybe has a year or two left. I haven't got his contract, but I like the landing spot there. I like Bryce Cable, too. I think that's a decent spot. Seattle, you know, new QB, I'll get a chance to compete maybe for a backup job or at least a spot on the 53. Man roster or whatever. I'm really intrigued and surprised. A couple guys were undrafted. Kobe Bryant was one of them. Melo Dotson was another. Logan Brown was another guy I was a little surprised. I thought Logan and Kobe would 100% get drafted. Like, Logan was projected in the fourth round from multiple mocks I saw. I was very surprised by that. Kobe, you can say whatever you want about his size. And I know he said
be a pro.
Yeah, I think he is too. Like, I just don't understand. Like, the idea that 26 corners were selected before him, like, whatever. Like, to me, that's just stupidity. This is a guy who was a 3-time first-team All-Big 12 player. He had warts, but so does everybody else. If his biggest issue is, well, he's 175 pounds, he's 183 pounds, well, okay, man, just feed him food. Like, what are we doing here? He can play slot corner. If he's good, he's good. I mean, and I felt bad for him a little bit, you know, because I know he really did work his tail off. And you know, I think my Atlanta fans have been texting me about him because I'm from Georgia, so everyone's been like, what he is. I was like, well, I think he's a dog. Between him and Nash, the Falcons picked up some undrafted free agents that are pretty intriguing. So I'm happy for him in that sense, but I was surprised he wasn't drafted.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was more surprised by Bryant than I was Devin Neal falling, honestly, just as productive as he was at that position. Shreyas, we appreciate it. Go find all the great stuff. Shreyas has his hand, finger on the pulse all the time. You can follow him on social at SHRE98. You can find all his work at KC Star. We appreciate it because we can't do it. We can't keep up with the portal. So we're glad that you can.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That'll do it for Sports Daily on a Wednesday. We got Royals baseball coming up. Pre-game coverage begins at 6 o'clock. We'll see if they can score some runs. It's going to be tough tonight. But more importantly, we'll watch Cameron in that debut.
But then also, I think it could basically show what this guy has long term. I'm excited about it.
Tomorrow, we'll have Tim Fitzgerald in. Excited to get his take on this new Serbian player coming into K-State hoops and maybe a little more time for his Go Powercat crew to get the latest on that. So we're looking forward to that as well. That'll be it for us. Your comments, calls, always welcome. For Max and Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you Thursday.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crime-ity.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.